Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 8th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, Mr. President. The bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 227, Education Constitution Instruction. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 232, Workers' Compensation Impairment Ratings. Ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. House Bill 243, Human Remains Training of Search and Rescue Dogs. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 253, Wyoming Nurse Practice Acts Amendment. Ayes 58, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 8th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 194, Next of Kin Driver's License Option. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 225, Charter School Appeal Process 2. Ayes 34, noes 24, excused 2. House Bill 252, Review of State Executive Department Positions. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 8th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 191, Wind Power Taxation. Ayes 29, noes 29, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 227, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 227, Education, Constitution Instruction, and Act Relating to Education, sponsored by Representative Gay, passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 227 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 243, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 243, Human Remains, Training of Search and Rescue Dogs, and Act Relating to Human Remains, sponsored by Representative Crone, passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 243 has been referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 253, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 253, Wyoming Nurse Practices Act Amendment, an act relating to nursing, sponsored by Representative Kasparik. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 253 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. House Bill 232, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 232, Workers' Compensation Impairment Ratings and Act Relating to Workers' Compensation. What's that word I'm looking for? Representative Nicholas passed the House, ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. I couldn't think of that word.
House Bill 232 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. Health. Reports from standing committees.
February the 8th, 2011. Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 117, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. No, Senator Case, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 8th, 2011. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. February the 8th, 2011. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 4, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. February the 8th, 2011. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 114, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Scott, the chair is yours. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 3. Reading clerk will please read the House Bill.
House Bill 3, Liquor License Transfers, an act relating to alcohol, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Conflict, Senator Case. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr.
The previous sentence said, the approval of the transfer shall not be given by the licensing authority if proceedings, including an action to collect delinquent sales tax payments, that's what the old and kind of vague language is, the new language is, not be given by the licensing authority if the transferring licensee is certified by the department to be 60 or more days delinquent. So it's crispy clear. No one testified against the bill in committee. I do note that I own a liquor license and have a refreshing, wonderful establishment that you all should attend sometime. And I typically declare a conflict on liquor bills, and I did so in committee and like that to be so noted. Be happy to answer any questions. There was no amendments, and everyone seemed to be in favor of it.
Any discussion? Seeing none, the question is being called for. The question is, on Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 3 pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 3 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 15. Reading clerk will please read it.
House Bill 15, Weed and Pest Control, an act relating to weed and pest control, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. It was assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, on the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Reading clerk, please read in the Standing Committee Amendment.
House Bill 15, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 5, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, House Bill 15, Standing Committee Number 1, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Hicks to explain the amendment and the bill.
Senator Hicks, let's see if we've got your microphone on.
I think we got her, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House Bill 15, and for my less agriculturally oriented colleagues here in the Senate, give you a little brief background on what weed and pest control districts are. And I want to right off the bat alleviate any concerns that there's no provisions in here that designate certain senators as pests. So. Mr. Chairman, Title 11 deals with the agriculture. Chapter 15 deals with weed and pest districts. Weed and pest districts came into being sometime about 1973. Their primary purpose at that time was trying to increase productivity of agricultural ground. Since that time, they've had an expanded role to also provide ecosystem protection from invasive non-native species that includes weeds and insects. There hasn't been any substantial update to weed and pest statutory law since about 1979, so a good portion of this bill deals with just updating and clarifying some language. A little additional background information. Weed and pest districts are funded through a local mill levy at the county level, which is a property tax that funds their operation. And they're also operated by a board of directors that is appointed by the county commissioners. So just a little information there. If we get on to the bill, I'd like to move the bill first. It just provides some modifying definitions to upgrade the nomenclature and the language that's now used within that sector. It provides for some emergency declarations, sale of property and equipment, repealing provisions and establishing inspectors, the districts, and supervisors. Now, modifies some of the cost-sharing rates that they do with landowners, and then requires reports and increases criminal penalties and provides other conforming regulations. If we go to the engrossed copy, if you go to page 2, go under penalties for violation, 11-1-103, that covers all the general provisions under Title 11 that have misdemeanor penalties for either agricultural or livestock violations. If you go down there, the only insert new under that section is in line 13, which includes a new section 11-5-117 that we'll get to at the back of the bill. Next section on the short title, it just strikes the date 1973 is when this was originally enacted. If you go to page 3, it gets into purposes of this act as controlling designated and declared weeds and pests, and we'll get into the definition of what constitutes a designated versus a declared weed or a pest. If you move down to definitions, on page 3, line 13, you're going to see some conforming language in here that goes all the way through where it says authorized dealer means strike out the word resident of and just states any pesticide dealer licensed to do business in the state of Wyoming versus just a resident. So this is the current operating criteria is what they operate under. If we move down on page 3, line 18, control, this is a new definition of control, again, that actually represents what the activities that are going on the ground today are. Basically, that's preventing, identifying, mitigating weed and pest infestations by using multiple integrated management practices, including but not limited to regulation, prevention, survey, eradication, pesticides, cultivation, competition, grazing, and biological control in an adaptive management effort designed to reduce economic and ecological impacts from designated and declared species to protect uninfested lands. Now we get into the definitions. You go down to page 4, line 5. A declared pest means any animal or insect species which the Board of the Wyoming Weed and Pest Council have found either by virtue of its direct new language or indirect effect to negatively impact management of agricultural natural resource ecosystems. If we move on down page 4, line 13, it gets to the definition of a declared weed versus a declared pest. It just deals with plant species and then some additional language. If you go to line 15, it says, or indirect to negatively impact management of agricultural natural resource ecosystems. Same language, just dealing with both pests and weeds. Bottom of page 4, this is a new language that provides for an emergency declaration. And primarily what this may be in that, if we end up with an insect pest that moves into the area that's not currently on the list, that the Weed and Pest Board can act very rapidly to address these pests as they may impact crops or livestock within the state of Wyoming. If we move to page 5, new section, designated noxious. One of the distinctions between designated noxious weeds can only be done by the Weed and Pest Council, which is a compilation of all the entities within the state of Wyoming, versus a designated species can be done at the local level. But what this does, it says designated noxious, which means any plant species. Strike some of the old language and insert the new language. Being detrimental to the general welfare of the persons residing within the state of Wyoming, et cetera, et cetera. We move down to page 12. It defines what would be constituted a designated noxious plant species would have these particular characteristics. Has demonstrated the ability to aggressively invade native plant communities and agricultural crops. Is injurious or poisonous to livestock. As a carrier of disease or parasites, and can, by virtue of either direct or indirect effect, negatively impact management of agricultural and natural resource ecosystems. Okay, let's flip to page 6. Getting back to a designated species. Designated species would only occur at the local level, which is primarily the county level. They don't carry the full weight of as a noxious species, which is regulated by the whole state of Wyoming under that Weed Management Council. New language there, just defining and clarifying what a designated species would be as a pest, which means any animal or insect species that is determined to be detrimental to the general welfare of the state, persons residing within the state of Wyoming due to any of the following. Again, same list of criteria that designates what would constitute a designated pest. Is demonstrated ability to aggressively invade native plant communities and agricultural crops, is injurious or poisonous to livestock, is a carrier of disease or parasites and can, by virtue of its direct or indirect effect, negatively impact management of agricultural or natural ecosystems. Page 7, new language. We now have one to include under Roman numeral X, V, little I, farm products means all crops, crop products, and nursery stocks. If we go down to Roman numeral 20 under landowner, it provides a new definition, means any person who has actual use, exclusive possession, or exercises control of the land or any lease. Go down to page 7, line 3, new subsection for the emergency purposes of an emergency declaration. By definition, this means the addition of a weed and pest to either the statewide designated list or to a county declared list on an emergency basis to allow for immediate control activities. An emergency declaration shall only last until formal action can be taken to by the council and the board to list that species as established through rules, and not in any case exceeds more than 1 year. You flip the page over to page 8. This is a section under 11-5-104. They just want to raise their surety bond from $3,000 to $50,000 to more effectively cover their expenditures that they're doing today. If you go to bottom of page 8, under duties, powers, and supervisor compensation, it strikes out some of the old language. It says such programs do not qualify for cost sharing from the department. And that referenced the Department of Agriculture, which they currently are not doing. A new section underneath that is buy and sell real property, personal property, and equipment as needed to carry out district programs. This is the new section to reflect currently what weed and pest districts are doing. Approximately 18 of the districts in the state of Wyoming currently own property to house their facilities, equipment, trucks, and run the operation of the weed and pest district. If you move down through the page, under Board of Certification and Duties, page 9, line 15 through 17, just strike that language. There is no longer any inspector certified. That was part of the enabling legislation. They did that. They currently don't do that, so that's not applicable to the day's situation. You're going to see some other conforming language all the way through this bill. On line 23, page 9, that strikes the word agricultural pesticide. This is going to be consistent with some of the amendments that we're going to look at, too. And the reason to do that is a lot of these pesticides aren't exclusive to agricultural use. They could be used in homes, yards, gardens, city parks, and other areas above and beyond just agricultural land. So they have a broader spectrum of use. If we go to the next page, page 10, go to line 8. This is a new section. It says the district board may cost share with the landowner the cost of the pesticides, the cost of the application, and the cost of any other integrated management practice for the control or designated of a declared noxious weeds and pests. Currently, the way the weed and pest districts operate, with their county mill levy appropriations, they work with landowners where we have the infestations of these noxious weeds that are on a statewide list, and they will cost share on the cost of the chemical and on some occasions with the cost of the applications. You may want to think back just this last year with the grasshopper outbreak that we've had. At least in our areas and some places, they may have cost shared with landowners to treat some of the grasshopper outbreaks, but it's a practice that they currently do. It's pretty routine. If we go on down page 10 at the bottom, again, if you see line 18, we just strike out agriculture. You're going to see that consistent through this new bill draft. Then it strikes out the old language, says the district board may cost share in agricultural pesticides with with landowners and shall pay the full cost of the application. The only thing that's different there is on a rare occasion they do cost share with the actual application cost where they didn't previously. And then it gives as provided under WS, if you turn the page 115107, that goes back to Section D. That's the new language that was inserted on page 10. If we move down to the next section, 11-5115, this is a program in cities and towns that authorize funding and use of those monies. What this program does is if you have a town greater than 5,000 people within a weed and pest district, and they want to do their own weed control program within the boundaries of the city limits, they can ask for the funds directly from the weed and pest district to take on that activity themselves. What this section does, because some towns have done this, is basically requires a reporting requirement. There may have been some not so good discretionary use of how these funds were being used. And because this is a mill levy appropriation paid by the taxpayers, there needs to be a little bit of accountability here. The Weed and Pest District is accountable for the expenditures of these funds. So basically what this does is provide a reporting requirement that if a town requests 85% of all those monies collected in the town, they have to write a report saying which chemicals they use and which weeds they were used to spray on within the city limits. 11-15-117, this is a criminal provision for penalties. We strike some of the old language out in lines 19 through 22, and it adds new language. It says, other than 11-5-109, shall be punished provided as in WS 1-1-103. 11-5-109 is a provision within weed and pest statutes that say if you have a prohibited noxious weed on your property and you're notified by the district that you need to do something to that action, and there's a formal process of notification and inspection requirements by the Weed and Pest Board. If you fail to take an action and the Weed and Pest District goes in there and basically treats that, provides an opportunity to go back and seek reimbursement through the court systems for those expenditures on time and equipment. 11-1-103 is just the general provisions under Title 11 that allow for penalties. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that we move the bill, and then we can address the amendments.
Yeah. The Standing Committee amendment has been moved. Would you care to explain it?
Okay, we can move to the Standing Committee amendment then, Mr. Chairman, and we can track that in. If we go to page 5, line 3, at the word, delete the word whose. Well, let me see if I can get caught up. I'm on the wrong page here. Here we go. It deletes whose, and then it inserts a new language. So the way that we'll read now is, has designated noxious weed mean any plant species which is on the designated list due to its seeds or other plant parts? Now, that's how that amendment will track in. Then if you go to page 5, line 7, you strike the word R and insert bean. Next line, page 5, line 8, delete the word determined to be. So that will now read, seeds or other plant parts being determined to, let me see, how's that right? Determined to be, or detrimental to the general welfare of persons residing within the state of Wyoming. You go to line 9, you're going to strike out due to any, and then insert the new language, because the plant species, and I will tell you there's an omission here that we need to come back with an additional amendment that should read is because of the plant species, and we'll bring that back at the next reading, Mr. Chairman. It's just a clarification. Next is delete line 10, page 5, line 24, delete and renumber. We go to page 6, line 4. Let's see. Again, we're going to strike out that same language that says that is determined to be and insert the same language that we did in the previous section that states which is on the designated list due to its being. That's consistent with the last section. Now, if you go to page 6, line 5, we're going to reinsert the word the. Page 6, line 6, delete the same language we did in the previous provision that says to due to any of the, and insert because the plant species. Delete line 7, page 6, line 9. Delete it's demonstrated, and insert has demonstrated the. So that new language will now read has demonstrated the ability to aggressively invade native plant communities. Page 6, line 9. We just did that one. Page 6, line 21, delete and renumber. Go to page 10, line 6. After 4, insert the words designated or declared noxious. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would entertain any questions from the body.
Any questions or discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Seeing none, questions being called for, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I challenge some of the grammar that's going in, but with respect to the new definition that says the weed means any species which is on the list because of these items, so that means you have to get on the list first, and it has to be on the list for these items. Ordinarily, I think that you have to meet these to get on the list, but once on the list, seems to me that you've created a circular event here. And I suppose that if it's on the list and somebody comes in and challenges that it doesn't meet these requirements, then I think you just have a circular event here. So, I mean, I guess it's your amendment, but I wonder if that's what you really intend to do.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, a couple questions for on. Never mind. I guess we're on the amendment right now.
Yeah.
I'll hold my question for the bill.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Any further discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Amendment is adopted. Back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, hold on a minute, just a second.
Wire me.
Okay, there we go. Now, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, could I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. Chairman, a number of years ago, the legislature started the WAMI program. That was the partnership we had, still have, with the University of Washington to provide medical education. And today we're privileged to have the students that are in the WAMI program. They're up visiting up here, and I'll introduce them, and we really do appreciate them coming over, but we appreciate the hard work they're doing, and we want to encourage them to come back. So I'm going to give the names, and I expect each of the responsible senators to provide them with a house and a place of business when they come back home. You just thought it was a scholarship, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot more to it than that. But they're Ryan Abazada from Gillette. Senator Hines, that's yours. Katie Brown from Smoot. A brief Senator Dockstetter, that's yours. Catherine Cantway from Albany County. Senator Nicholas, pretty quick, you'll have a full practice of doctors. Lindsay Capron from Park County. Senator Coe. Jacqueline Foss from Natrona County, that's Senator Scott and Senator Landon's country. Kyle Hancock from Evanston, Senator Bernard, that's your responsibility. You can open a dual practice because Dane Hill is here, also from Uinta County. Crystal Jones from Buffalo, I need treatment. Help me, please. Don't listen to him. I don't need the cure. Amy Kennedy from Wheatland, Senator Meyer, that's yours. Megan McKay from Casper, Senator Perkins and Senator Jennings, you're in charge. David Mills is here from over at Ten Sleep, Senator Geis, that's your part of the world. Trenton Morton from Cody, Senator Coe, that's part of yours. Emily Reed from Wilson, Senator Christensen, I believe that's your part of the world. Elise Springer from Sheridan, Senator Burns' district. Geetha Serdan is from Rollins, Senator Hicks, that's the mother county. And Mallory Sullivan from Jackson, Senator Christensen. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, and we appreciate what you say.
Welcome, students. Welcome to the Senate. And we hope you enjoy your stay here and study hard. We're going to need you. Back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple questions. First of all, I'm wondering about on the top of page 9, we're now expanding the ability to buy and sell real property and personal property and equipment is needed to carry out, which is they already have the ability to buy a personal property, but the authority to buy real property is expanded, and I'm just wondering about that and how that fits into the overall county issues, although I know weed pest controls are often independent and fed by their own revenue stream. The other question I have for you on page 10, line 4, where we're striking out the word agricultural, I'm just wondering, now that that would seem to be a broad mandate or a broad ability to sell even residential sites, and I think before we were talking about more quantity issues, and this falls into a concern with respect to competing with a private sector. I know that there's a prohibition that's existing in the statute already that provides about applications, but this is in a different area and wouldn't seem to be precluded by that. So that seems to be an expansion. The other thing I was worried about too, or a question you could help me with, is we've expanded the penalty for violations of this act, and in going through the act and skimming it, what it seems to me is the violation is if you don't, if you have noxious pests or weeds on your property and you don't spray those or treat those, but ultimately that's the violation. That's with what you're charged, and now we're saying that first violation, that's a misdemeanor. Punishable up to 6 months in jail and $750 fine, and we're doubling that for a second subsequent offense. I understand that, but it seems to me that that's a pretty, I mean, there's also the ability to go ahead and apply it, I believe, and charge that individual for the work that's done. So I'm wondering why we need to have both those, why we need to enhance that penalty that much, so much. And the last question I would have for you is about the emergency declaration power, which is on page 7, line 13, and about that, that seems to be a pretty broad expansion of the power that's otherwise provided with this board. And so I just appreciate some insight on those questions from me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to address as many of these as I can, starting out with the good senator from Albany County, talking about the language, and I guess after looking at that as it pertains to the amendment and how that now reads, I would concur with you, but you got to understand, in agriculture, we tend to like to circle the wagons. So I think that's something that we can probably address in the second reading of that bill, but I do think you're probably correct there. To address the good senator from Matrona Counties on the acquisition of real property, currently under statute, it basically says anything they need to do to implement the act, and because for a long-standing period, weed and pest districts have owned real property to house their facilities and operations, this is basically just to clarify that. in terms that it's always been inferred that they can own real property, but this just or puts that in prescriptive definitions of how that would in statute. On the emergency declaration on page 7, line 13, again, one of the reasons that, and I won't go into a long list, but right now there's, within the state of Wyoming, I can't remember how many species that we designate as prohibited noxious. But if you look at the state surrounding us, that, there's close to another 80 to 100 and some different species of insects and weeds that we currently don't have in the state of Wyoming, and we don't want them. And the reason that they want this provision in here is if we get in a situation where we see something that needs to be reacted upon in a very short fashion, they can address that. You will notice at the bottom of that provision, it says, and in any case not to exceed 1 year. So this really is intended to be an emergency situation that they can't respond to, because to get those onto the list, that has to go through the Weed and Pest Council, again, which is a compilation of all the districts in the University of Wyoming. So to provide them the flexibility to address issues that currently and species that currently aren't on that list but are certainly surrounding the state of Wyoming, the districts felt that was an essential part of the updating of this to be able to act nimbly, responsibly, and quickly to any potential invasions of native pest or species and non-natives into the state of Wyoming. I don't know if I captured all those, Mr. Chairman, but with that, I would entertain additional questions if I didn't answer all the questions.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking over on page 11, subsection C, it appears in reading this that we restricted the funds or the monies received from cities in the district to control. And I have thought that at some point in time that some of the cities or towns have helped cost share and equipment when you look at the West Nile virus or mosquito and that situation where they might buy a sprayer and have the Weed and Pest District do the spraying or something like that, in the, especially maybe in the rural areas outside of town. But this seems to prohibit the, that and solely limits it to the to control, and I'm assuming control is as it's defined in this section. And I'm wondering if we just took that language out on 8 and 9 that says to control noxious weeds and pests and just say shall be used as determined by the governing body of the city and town, that you'd get rid of that restriction and you'd loosen it up to where you still have control of the city and town as far as how they want the Weed and Pest District to work with them, but you wouldn't have the restrictions to just control. And I might look at that perhaps on second reading, Mr. Chairman. I hope it'd be a friendly amendment.
Senator Bayback.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. On dealing with that question on page 11 under lines 7 through 15, and I'm trying to remember the city, and so there was some abuse made there, and we tried to come up with some language that allow that money to be clearly for what it was intended, noxious weeds and pests. And maybe there's some better language, but I think we got to be very careful that we don't open it back up and have that same kind of abuse that did occur before.
Further discussion? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question to the Senator. On page 10, we talk about cost share on line 8. Maybe a better understanding of that. It looks like down below, one time it was the landowner that picked up the full cost of that. But if you could explain the cost share program a little more.
Senator Bayback.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The language on page 10, it really does say the same thing with the landowner and the cost of the pesticides. And I think the clarity was that before it was the district board shall share the cost in the pesticides and landowner shall pay the full cost. We thought this language made it simpler so that they would share and that they would work it out together because they're both trying to do the same thing. That's to control the noxious weeds.
Senator Nutting.
In 1973, I don't think there were any organic farms, and I just wondered if the sponsor would discuss if this impacts organic farming and if there needs to be any mention of that in the bill.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to the original definition of what constitutes or the new definition for control. And I think it will address the good senator from right here in the home city's concerns. As control means a process of containing, preventing, and if you go down through there, it doesn't preclude other things other than the use of herbicides or pesticides. So if you have prohibited noxious weeds and you wanted to use goats as an organic means to treat those, that's certainly an acceptable means under control. One of the things that you routinely see in the weed and pest districts do is using beneficial insects to attack some of these weed species, cultivation. So there's a whole range of biological, cultivation, physical that wouldn't preclude a landowner from addressing the noxious weed problem. So I don't see where it would have any negative impacts on an organic farm as long as they were trying to implement some type of control program, which is obviously at their best interest. So hope that addresses the question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back in two different places, it looks like the interim committee has inserted the language general welfare of the persons residing in Wyoming. And my question is that what you really intend? And that is that in order to get on that list, you have to determine that it is it's something that affects the general welfare of persons. So I suppose that if people aren't adversely impacted by leafy splurge, then you can't get on the list. I really wonder if in two places I see that in the old language is the general welfare of the state, and so you'd look at really what is the welfare of our agricultural industry, and now you've changed it fairly significantly to say that it needs to be found to I assume, to be against the general welfare or to adversely impact the welfare of persons. I'm kind of interested in that new language.
Our discussion. Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned, and I just would like to see the language tightened up on page 6, the definition of designated pest. The more I read this, the more general it appears to be. It seems to cover wolves, for one thing. I'm not entirely sure that was necessary, but that might cause some problems. And it may even cover some of my fellow senators when we're looking at some of the parameters here. It's overly broad. The concept of just being a carrier of disease, any animal that's a carrier of disease, that's broad in that realistically most animals carry some disease of some sort. So I would just like, Mr. Chairman, to see that language tightened up a little bit, maybe that definition thought through a little bit. Some of the concerns that my fellow senator from Albany County mentioned are also concerns of mine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
One of the answers to my main questions and concerns, if in the existing statute, 11.5108, what you have is the board has a certain number of powers. These weed and pest control boards have a certain number of powers. They can establish rates and engage in the application of agricultural pesticides for weed and pest control. They can't engage in but then you get down to 11.509, and whenever the district board has probable cause to believe that there exists land infested by weeds or pests, which would be on this list, they have the right to investigate. They have the right to enter upon your property after they obtain, through the use of lawful entry procedures, So if they have probable cause to believe that you have weeds or pests on your property, they can come on your property. They can inspect your property. They have to provide you notice if they find that you're infested, and that they decide, two-thirds of them decide that you need to do remedial acts, they can order you to perform remedial acts. Those remedial acts have to be performed, and they may cost share with you, or they may just simply require that you do it. If you don't do it, they can go ahead and do it for you and assess the property. The fines become, they can accumulate you. The fines are $50 a day for a violation and not more than a total of $2,500 per year as determined by the court. And then you have these fines and other things that can actually become liens upon your property. And then on top of that, we're going back and we're expanding this so that if you do this more than once, it's also a crime. And I haven't heard an explanation of why we should not only throttle these people by coming on. You have the ability to go on their land, tell them what to do, how to do it, charge, if they don't do it, do it and charge them for it, then come back and also make it a criminal action where you can potentially put them in jail for up to a year and fine them up to $2,500 in addition to that. So help me with that, please.
Senator Janik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you're explaining the question to my neighbor senator there, I'd kind of like you to expand a little bit on what is lawful entry, because it says lawful entry, then if they find anything, then they have to give you notice. So, and I went back to the statute and read, it doesn't really explain what that lawful entry is. Is it just because you're bigger?
And your Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to give you a little background about this and the testimony, and the Senate has to understand the way this bill came about. And one of the main things that we were trying to do with the weed and pest districts in Wyoming and their board, they have certain situations where you could have a neighbor that clearly there's a problem there with the noxious weed. You can see it. And if you have a crop here and 100 yards away, there's something there that's going to pretty soon be in your field, you get concerned about it. And so obviously what happens, you call your weed and pest and see if they can talk to that person and try to do something about that potential weed that, you know, pretty soon it's going to be on your property. The existing law is what my colleague from Natrona County talks about. And when the weed and pest district brought this issue to the Ag Committee, there was discussion about how better to implement that and be tougher in that regard. And I have to tell you, quite frankly, when we started out, they wanted to have the authority to go in there and do it anyway, which was a really bad idea because they're an appointed board, and yet they were going to have the authority to do that. Made no sense to the committee, so we didn't like that idea. The second thing we talked about was to give the county commissioners an opportunity to have that power to say, okay, you know, clearly you're violating our law. Clearly there's a problem there, and clearly we're going to do something about it. They didn't want the responsibility, so we left the law the way it is. In reality, there's a lot of protection there for the private property owner, but in order to do that and get on that private property, it's been really problematic. And so the intent to do that is to, okay, the first time around that you do this, you don't listen to us, you let the weed grow and it becomes a real problem for your neighbor, you know, we're going to say you shouldn't have done it. The second time around, there's going to be a penalty. And that was our response to try to deal with this issue. If there is a better way, and my colleagues have a better way to do that, we sure struggled with it. The intent is to try to provide the tools to do what they're supposed to do, which is prevent noxious weeds from spreading. If you got a neighbor that's not concerned about it, sometimes they're absentee owners, they don't want to deal with it, they really had no teeth. We're trying to say that, okay, this is a way to do that. At least they'll pay attention if there is, in fact, a second offense, a fine.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess my question is, when we talk about elevating the fines and making a criminal case here, I'd be interested to know what the examples are of the existing fines and penalties already being used, and are they being exhausted? Is that why they're not? We have to go higher? I hear a lot of talk about it in different communities, but I haven't personally seen too many examples. Okay, I haven't seen any examples of exhausting the existing penalties, but that may not be the case. I'm curious.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to help provide some clarity on this issue, which I'll probably not do, but I'm going to attempt. We deal with the situation, and I'm going to give you a scenario, that if you're a certified seed producer, you have to have absolutely zero tolerance for noxious weeds. And the difference, if you're raising a certified grass that goes to the BLM, they will only accept it if it's certified noxious weed free. Now, if your neighbor is not controlling his weeds and they blow onto your property and establish in your certified field, you've literally foregone hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of lost revenue because of your neighbor's refusal to comply with the law. So there has to be a little bit of teeth in this thing. I can tell you that the weed and pest districts are very judicious in how they implement that. But getting to my good senator from Natrona County's question under 11.5.117, where it says criminal provisions and penalties. If you read that on page 11, it says any person violating any provision in this act other than 11.5.109. And what 11.5.109 is that provision to allow the weed and pest districts to notify a landowner. You have an appeals process through the APA, but at some point in time, you need to get in there and address this situation because of the impacts to your neighbors or the community because of some prohibited noxious weed. That's separate than if you violate the other provisions of this act. So there's really two components of that. One of them is other than. So if you're in non-compliance with that section where you refuse to treat noxious weeds on your property and you're given due process, you have an opportunity for a hearing through the APA, and you get all the way due there. Then the weed and pest district can go in there, control that, and then send you a bill for that. The other component, the way I read that, is it shall be punished as provided in 11-1-103, which that's a general provision that covers all misdemeanors under the Section 11, which is the agricultural title. I don't know if that addresses it, but that's the way I read the intent here, if that helps, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't belabor this, but other than that, that's exactly the point, is I don't think there's any other violation of this act that anybody can do, with the exception of the Weed and Pest Board can violate this act by doing things that they're not authorized to do. But for any other citizen, I think the only violation of this act you can have is failure to respond in the exact section that we've talked about. And this says that it's a penalty for failing to respond for violating any provision of this act. I think that's the only provision any of us could violate in this if we're not on the Weed and Pest Board. So I just don't know. I don't understand how this provision is going to work.
Senator Hicks.
If I can, I think if we can get this passed out, if you go back to page 2 and under the penalty of violations, and you go down there starting on page 14, and it lists all the other provisions, and I think we can bring back and address the good senator's concerns under there, because there's some provisions under the livestock board also that basically say that if you are responsible for bringing any pests in, again, there's some penalties associated with doing that. And that's the recapture provision that this does. It says under weed and pests, you would go back and revert. It reverts back and you recapture it under those provisions. But I think if we can get this passed out in second reading, I think we can address the good senator's concerns at that time, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further discussion, the question being called for, the question is on Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so, the recommendation that House Bill 15 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
The act ends at 119.
Opposed, no.
It doesn't go to these other sections. It stops at 119. When you
House Bill 15 has passed Committee of the Whole.
These other ones up.
When they say this back.
The next House bill for your consideration is House Bill 18. The reading clerk will please read it.
See right here. Any providing provision of...
House Bill 18, Quarantine of Animals, an act relating to the quarantine of animals, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rides and report, I move House Bill 18 do pass. And then we also have a standing committee amendment I'd like read in.
Reed Clerk, please read in standing committee amendment.
House Bill 18, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 16.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, I would move standing committee to House Bill 18, number 1, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Emmerich to explain the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 18 is primarily a bill that does some cleanup language. It simplifies some of the duties of the state veterinarian by allowing quarantines of animals that are diseased and exposed, which was already in the statute, but also to those that are illegally imported into the state. The state veterinarian may possibly seize and dispose of these animals if there cannot be a settlement between the owner of illegally imported animals. The bill also adds and deletes some actions of the state veterinarian due to changes in medical practice or veterinary medical practice which are no longer needed, such as dipping and shearing, things of this sort, primarily in sheep, because we no longer need to dip sheep. But as I go through the bill, and I'll also try to add the amendment in as I discuss the bill. On page 2, well, I should say on page 1, we have penalty for violations. And as added in there, you'll notice 1119.103, which is duties of the state veterinarian generally. The state veterinarian may, on page 2, line 19, the state veterinarian may inspect, treat, test, vaccinate, quarantine, or sell any animal imported into Wyoming in violation of 1119.111 or any of the rules promulgated thereunder, which are the import rules written by the Wyoming Livestock Board. On page 3, we come to quarantine of diseased animals, and you will notice on line, or on page 3, line 16, we have added the verbiage, before infected, we insert imported in violation of the board's import rules. These are the rules that are promulgated by the board to try to keep ahead of importation of diseased animals or possibly exposed animals, because we've now come into several other diseases that are of importance to the agriculture community, such as trichomoniasis and things of that sort. As we go down through page 3, we have added in tested, vaccinated, and quarantined in on line 22. And as we come back to the back, there is just cleanup of some of the language where we are deleting the words dip, spray, or otherwise treat. These are no longer viable veterinary practices that are available to us. We now use better living through chemistry. On the bottom of page 4, line 18, we add the state veterinarian shall only sell the livestock after all other remedies have been exhausted. And this is very similar to another bill, an estray bill, which gives the state veterinarian the ability to do whatever seems to be the most prudent thing after negotiations with owners and things of that sort, to see what we have to do with these exposed, diseased, or illegally imported animals. And the last part of page 4, line 22, any person failing to comply with this section shall be punished as provided in 111.103. On page 5, there is a new section. The state veterinarian may inspect, treat, test, vaccinate, quarantine, or sell any livestock imported into Wyoming in violation of 1119.111 or any rules promulgated by the Wyoming Livestock Board. Any order or regulation by the state veterinarian is subject to review, modification, or annulment by the governor or the board at any subsequent meeting. This is just kind of a fail-safe to prevent the state veterinarian from running wild should he decide to do so. And we finish with an order of the state veterinarian under subsection D shall be subject to appeal and due process, of course. We are repealing statutes 1119.103 C and D, which relates back to some of the more archaic veterinary practices that were in statutes previous to this. I would move that you, or ask that you please give consideration to the amendment and to the bill. And I will stand for any questions.
Okay. Discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question being, seeing none, question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendments, please say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so, the recommendation of House Bill 18 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 18 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19.
House Bill 19, Assignment of Retired Circuit Court Judges and Act Relating to Circuit Court Judges, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. It was assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Perkins?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee hold rise and report, I do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 19, Assignment of Retired Circuit Court Judges. I don't believe there are any amendments, and with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I will explain the bill. What this bill does is it simply provides for retired circuit court judges to be hired to come back and fill opportunities when they may be needed. We have a number of retired circuit court judges out there that are active. There comes from time to time an opportunity when circuit court judges may need to recuse themselves because there may be parties or there may be a heavy load in one area and you can't get a circuit judge in to fill that. So what this does is allows you to go out and get a retired circuit court judge who's not practicing law. So in other words, he's on retired status and not actively practicing law. He comes in and this bill allows that when that happens, and they hear a case that they get paid the same as other circuit court judges would get on a day rate kind of a thing. They can also get the same per diem or travel allowance that a circuit court judge would if they travel away from their home to do that. And then it tries to restrict that. So a couple things. One, that if they're retired and they're getting their retirement, they get this money in addition to what their retirement is for the wage that they get. And then the other thing it does is when they pay that, it doesn't do anything to affect or enhance their retirement, so their retirement increases because they came back and worked on a part-time basis. So that's what this bill does. It just allows us in those instances when there needs to be some additional circuit court judge for a period of time or a particular case in a specific area, it allows that to happen. Gives the Supreme Court pays for that out of their budget, and that's what this bill does. And with that, I ask you to vote it, give it favorable consideration. Let's stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the bill? Any discussion on the bill? Senator Barnard. Hold just a minute while we get this thing to work. Okay, Senator Barnard.
Chairman, I have some questions in relation to this. Do judges have any continuing education requirements after they retire? And will they be able to keep up with the law after they retire? Or will the changes in the law be that fast that they'll still be adjudicating the same laws? I'd offer that as a question, please.
Senator Perkins.
The answer to the question is, if they're going to maintain their bar license, which is actually the license to practice law, not the right to go to the bar, but if they're going to maintain their bar license, they have to have their continuing education unless they're on an active status. So they would have to have that. What was your other question? Was that it? Okay. So, yes, if they're going to keep their active license going, this doesn't have that as a requirement, but I'm sure that that's what the Supreme Court has in mind, that they're not going to, you don't want to go get somebody who's out of touch. As far as their ability to keep up with the law, I guess that depends on us and how many we pass.
So. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question of the Chairman of the Judiciary. One of the changes made from the original Judiciary bill that was made in the House is on page 2, line 6, we put in during any period of assignment. And I want to be sure that I understand when you assign one of these judges to do that, sometimes these court cases do go on and on and on, and we add in the word during any period of assignment, yet initially it just said a retired circuit judge shall receive. So are we somehow, and I just want to be sure I understand, so if this case goes on for a long period of time, how that will be handled and why the change was made.
Senator Perkins.
I'm not sure why the change was made, in all honesty. I think they're just trying to get a clarification there that, you know, this could be for a particular day, it could be for a particular case, and so what you have there is that there's that when they do this, usually it's going to be for that purpose, and so it's for whatever period of time that they're going to be reactivated for that purpose. I think it's... But I have not had the conversations with the Judiciary Chairman on the other side of why that change was made. I did note that it was made, but I'm not sure why.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to echo the Chairman's ignorance as to why it was put in there. But
thank you.
I would like to point out that this is circuit court, so the idea of a long, drawn-out trial is very rare indeed.
Senator Jones.
Mr. Chairman, if we could back up just a little bit to the previous question. So if you're going to bring this judge on, he can't be practicing law, but if you bring him on, he needs to continue to have good standing at the bar and to continue education. So they're going to retire with the idea that they're going to come back?
Senator Perkins.
I mean, that's just, it's the same with any professional license. If you want to keep it active, you have to continue to meet the requirements. If you want to put yourself on inactive status, you can put yourself on inactive status, whether you're an accountant, a lawyer, or an engineer, or a doctor. You can put yourself on inactive status, and then you don't have to complete those. So there's a number of people, there's lots of professionals who are interested in learning, are interested in keeping up their professions, and so they continue to do their continuing education. Whether or not they retire with the intent to come back, I don't know. I think the judges that I know that come back and do this, they do it because it's something that they do occasionally. It keeps them active and keeps them involved in their profession. I don't know that anybody plans to come back and double dip. And typically in the situations where this happens is you may have a judge that the caseload may be overdone. He may be, and keep in mind in circuit court, for a trial to go more than a day or two in circuit court, is a big trial for a circuit court. There are some that do go longer, but for the most part, they're going through, they're doing arraignments, they're setting bonds and bails, they're doing initial appearances. And so what you have, sometimes there's also times when a judge may be sick, judge may be there, you know, that he may have retired or he may have moved somewhere else, and so you've got, he may have been promoted or sought
become a district court judge, and so his circuit may be vacated for a short period of time. So generally we do this. We do it with district court judges. I don't think it amounts typically to these assignments are not for a long period of time, but just in those instances where there's a specific circumstance that you need to have a judge, and these guys are available, and they're willing to do it. So that's the best answer I can give you.
Seeing no further discussion, the question being called for, the question is on Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so, the recommendation that House Bill 19 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 31. Reading clerk, please read it.
House Bill 31, Paramutual Regulation, an act relating to the Paramutual Commission, sponsored by the Travel Commission. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 31, Paramutual Regulation. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a further explanation of the bill, I would call on the good senator from Sheridan County. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, as we all know, the Paramutual Commission is a branch of the state government, and it oversees the paramutual betting, which is mostly takes place dealing with both horse racing mostly horse racing, but also is allowed in rodeo events. But it's mainly for horse racing. And there are an ever-expanding number of both websites and TV stations and so forth that are dedicated to showing horse racing. People either call in or have apps on their cell phones or on the Internet, and they set up accounts, and they bet on the horse racing all over the country. It's not that different than going to an off-track betting parlor and doing the exact same thing, only they're bringing the convenience to your home. Mr. Chairman, in recognition of that, what other states have done and what is being recommended in this bill is to set up what's called a source market fee, which I had never heard of before either. But what it basically does is those organizations that do this, when they take the information from their customers, they get all the relevant information, addresses, and so forth. What this legislation allows to set up is that those organizations that take this money pay a fee back to the state of Wyoming for those people who are betting in Wyoming and from Wyoming. Traditionally, it's about a 2% payback. And, Mr. Chairman, those states that are currently doing it, they're getting the money back. Those states that aren't, like us, don't get the money, and the operations that run these things are keeping the money. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically what the bill does. There are two parts to it. One is that sets up the source market fee, and you see that on page 2, starting on line 8 down to line 13. And then there's sort of an explanation. And the provision, that's the definition, down on lines 18 down to 24 on to page 3. That's the enabling legislation. That's what allows the Paramutual Commission to set up the market source fee and states that these organizations will pay, and we set up a maximum of 10%. And the testimony we have is right now the market average is about 2%. So, Mr. Chairman, the second part of the bill is on page 3, and that's where we get into the distribution, that money that comes in. It's estimated by the Paramutual Commission that would bring in about $200,000 a year. And that money, when it comes in, 75% of it will go to the live flat track permittees in the state. In other words, the racetracks in the state to add to their purses for the races. That's paragraph one. Paragraph two, another 10% would go to the annual simulcast handle. In other words, the purses paid out of off-track betting sites in the state of Wyoming. Another 10%, now we're getting up to 95%, goes to the Breeder Award Fund. And those are the horse breeders here in the state of Wyoming. There is a fund that's set up. If you want more information about that, I've actually asked the good senator from KC to explain that because he's involved in that. And then the final 5% goes to the commission for its administrative expenses. Now, Mr. Chairman, and anybody else in the room might say, oh, but Bruce, there is no live racing in the state of Wyoming. Because there isn't. The one racetrack did not have any racing last year. They do not have any racing this year, and they actually own the off-track betting sites, which they are now not operating in the state of Wyoming. So the question is, where does this money go? This money goes into a fund being held by the Parimutuel Commission and will continue to build up to such a point that it will become lucrative to actually run races in the state of Wyoming. Now, Mr. Chairman, keep in mind, these are horsey people, and they want to benefit the horse industry here in the state of Wyoming. It is a long and glorious tradition of horses in Wyoming, especially up in the country where I am. Some of the finest horses going all the way back to the Boer War came out of my part of the state of Wyoming. And, Mr. Chairman, that being said, I've reached the end of the bill, so I have nothing more to explain. So if anybody wants to ask any questions, I'd be glad to handle them.
Any discussion? Discussion. Seeing none, the question being called for. The question is on Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 31 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 31 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for your consideration is House Bill 57. Reading clerk will please read it.
House Bill 57, Feral Livestock, an act relating to feral livestock, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that House Bill 57 do pass. There's no amendments, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Driscoll to explain the bill.
Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman,
there's a Committee of the Whole amendment. Do you wish to explain the bill first?
Chairman, this bill is a fairly simple bill that goes a little more in-depth to a statute dealing with feral livestock in the state of Wyoming. The first portion of the bill is on lines 8 and 9, which is just a cleanup that takes an and out and adds a new portion to the penalty statutes, which is, in fact, the next part of the bill. You jump ahead to line 19 and 20, and this is just an amendment or a portion of the bill that deals with definition of what a feral animal is and adds that a feral animal may or may not be owned by a person. In the past, this is a feral animal did not have a definition of the person. Going to line 24, to line 22, new section 1148.102, disposition of feral livestock penalty. Line 24G, the owner of feral livestock shall be responsible for all damages caused by livestock. Goes on to explain the costs of gathering, veterinary services, transportation, other incidental expenses that are incurred by the livestock board gathering this will be paid by the owner of the feral livestock. Any person failing to comply with this section will be punished, section 11.103, which is the section on that. This bill is in response to feral livestock in Wyoming that's been repeatedly problems in different areas. They've tried to deal with it with feral and nuisance livestock laws. This simply gets it where they actually can deal with the feral livestock, put the costs back where they belong at, and take care of it. With that, I would move the bill.
Okay. You ready for the committee of the whole amendment?
Yes. Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Reading clerk will please read in the committee of the whole amendment.
House Bill 57, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 10.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 57. Mr. Chairman, what this does, it goes in again under the same paragraph, 1148-102. And before, a little background, before this animal is declared feral, The state vet has to go in and make an attempt to locate and identify the owner of the livestock. What this amendment does is says if he does locate the owner and the owner repeatedly refuses to take possession of the livestock, he's subject to the penalties which are in this act, which we just heard about, that he's responsible for damages, cost of gathering and feed, and so on and so forth. Mr. Chairman, more and more in this day and age, we find people that own livestock that just turn them loose or don't manage them, or they get out with, for example, wild horses and their own livestock. All of these things. What this does is try and say, if you do that, and we've identified you as the owner, you are still responsible for that animal. It is still yours. And so you've got to pay for the feed and so on and so forth. Mr. Chairman, one of the other problems we're looking at, particularly relates to the horse industry. It is very difficult. You can't slaughter horses in the United States legally anymore. So what you have, and that's the federal government helping us be good managers. I'm sure it's assistance that we really need. But what happens is, as you get particularly hobby horse operators, they're just turning them loose. And they can turn them loose at a sale barn. They can turn them loose in somebody's pasture. They can turn them loose down in the desert, or anywhere out, up in the forest, and it's happening. And until we can get that resolved, where we can identify the owner, and understand, through brand, through papers, whatever, we're saying you're still responsible for your horse or any other animal. So that's what this does. I believe it is complementary to the bill, and I did run it by the chairman and the person who's carrying it on the floor. I think it adds to the bill. I think it helps solve what is a growing problem in this state.
Senator Driscoll.
Great thanks to Concern for Livestock from Johnson County since 1892. Nicely explained. I'd like to stand for questions on the bill. It was the good part of the explanation was done by the good senator from Johnson County, which I failed to do well.
Let's hold the questions on the bill and confine our discussion to the amendment until we get it done.
Thank you. I would ask for consideration of the amendment and bill.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just one question for my distinguished colleague from the Fighting County. It says in here the attempt shall be made by the director or the state veterinarian, and I guess would that also include his designees, brand inspector, just to make that determination?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, under statutory language, anybody he designates as his representative can go in and act for him, whether it's in, wherever. I mean, that goes with the language and statute.
Further discussion?
Question.
Session seeing none. The question is on the Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill.
Question.
Question.
Any further discussion? Question being called on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 57 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 57 is passed, Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for your consideration is House Bill 60. Reading clerk, please read it.
House Bill 60, Taxation of Oil and Gas Field Services, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 60, Taxation of Oil and Gas Field Services. Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the bill. This is a joint revenue interim committee bill, which I was not a member of, so if I make a mistake, those members can help me out. What it does, really, it goes into the sales tax, section 3915-103, and then on page 2, it refers to the sales price paid for all services and tangible personal property used in rendering service to real or tangible personal property within an oil and gas site. And actually, what the department said, this is exactly what they've been doing for the past 47 years. It's just being changed to clear it up. The other change you'll see down on line 14, 15, and 16 is those statutes refers to sales tax collection for contractors, and it does not apply to the same rules do not apply on these properties in the oil and gas field. The few people that was there, they all supported the bill. The Petroleum Association had no problem with it, neither they or the Taxpayer Association. So it's just clarifying the language in the statute to confirm to what we've been doing. So I'll try to answer any questions if you have them. If not, I ask for your support and call for the question.
Any discussion? Any discussion?
Question.
Question being called for. The question is on Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 60 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 60 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 61. Reading clerk, please read it.
House Bill 61, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, an act relating to water development projects, sponsored by the Water Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate files or House Bills 61 do pass. This is the Planning Committee of the Omnibus Water Bill that's handed to us from the Wyoming Water Development Commission. They approve all these, and then it goes before the Select Water Committee, and then it comes before the Ag Committee. And now it's before you, for you guys to listen and
adopt or reject. All these monies are all state dollars because phase one is all 100% water development money. And we'll start off in level one projects, new development. The first one is in bill, page two of the bill. It's the Farset and Master Plan, Sweetwater County, $120,000. The next one is page two, Hanna Master Plan, Carbon County, $125,000. Next one is page two, line 363, Little Snake Watershed, Carbon County, $250,000. That's over around Baggs, Wyoming. The next one, Lower Norwood Rural Water Supply. There's a group of ranchers down on the Lower Norwood that are looking to see if it's feasible if they could either tie into the Bighorn Regional Water System or somewhere to get water to serve that lower water, Lower Norwood, which has not very good water. That's $70,000. The next one is Rollins Operation Study, Carbon County, $200,000 water supply plan, and we're looking at the reservoir and all those different things to see what we can do to keep Rollins with good water. The next one is the Snake Salt Basin groundwater. That's over in Teton County. And they're looking to see if they can get some more water for Alpine and those places, and that's $250,000. The next one is the State Water Research, State Water Research, statewide, $300,000 grain water, and this, they keep the $300,000 in the water development, and they contract with the University of Wyoming to do different studies for them. So, and so far we're getting our money's worth through the University of Wyoming. The next one, Sweetwater River Watershed, $100,000 watershed study. The subtotal that is $1,415,000. And we have to do these watershed studies so we can figure out how much water we really have in the state of Wyoming, because there's getting to be a bigger demand, and all the compacts we have, all these lower states want to get Wyoming's water. And when you really stop to look at where all the water comes from, you take the headwaters of the Missouri is the Madison, Jefferson, and the Gallatin Rivers, which all come out of Yellowstone Park and goes to Three Forks, Montana, and then it becomes the Missouri River. You got the Clark's Fork. That comes out of the National Yellowstone Park, drops right down through the north end of Wyoming, and that drops into the Yellowstone River. And the next one, you got the Wind River Bighorn, and that runs north, and that drops into the Yellowstone. And then you got the Platte River, which starts up in Walden, Colorado, and comes north through Wyoming over to Casper, and then heads east, and that goes to Nebraska, and that dumps into the Missouri. And then you got the South Platte, comes out of Colorado, and that dumps into the Missouri. So, you know, when you look at Wyoming compacts, we got to be careful how and what we can do to develop our water. So now we're going over on level two. We've got to look for water. Boulder Flats Water Supply, that's in Fremont County, $275,000. That's on the Indian Reservation, and we're trying to find some kind of groundwater to take care of. I think it's Fort Warski is the town. Either that or Ethity. It's one of those two. We've taken care of one of them, and then now the other one needs help. Burnswell, that's east of here. They need more groundwater, and that's $350,000. They're looking for groundwater. The Cambry Sweetwater Water Supply, Weston County, $125,000. There's about three different rural subdivisions and things over there. And what we're trying to tell them, hey, tie all of them together and make one water system out of them. Oh, Green River West Water Supply, and that's $85,000. They need a transmission line and that's over on, I call it the west side of the Green River, over where the college outreach, but it supplies, there's a couple of little subdivisions over there, and we're trying to get them to hook onto the Green River supply rather than drill wells, and so we're looking at what it costs to do a pipeline over there. Jeffrey City Water Supply, Fremont County, 100,000 rural water. Well, you know, at one time, Jeffrey City was a pretty up-and-going town, and now we built the water supply for them, and it's more than they can handle. And I think we'll see if we can shut it down to where to handle who's left there. But I understand the uranium's going to start up over there again, so we'll probably have to unplug the pipelines and go back to the big system. But that's the way it is. Lance Creek, Niobrara County. That's a little oil field town if you've never been there. 260,000, and they need groundwater. Mansville, that's just south of Lance Creek, about 20, 25 miles. What is that? The Six Sister truck stop. Yeah, that's enough there. They need thing. They got uranium and same problems they're having at Mansville as they're having at Lance Creek. They've got a lot of contaminants in the water. Pavilion, area water supply, Fremont County, and you've all heard all about that. So we're squeezing that in to see what we can do to develop water. We put 100,000 in to get some good water, do something to take care of the town of Pavilion. Subtotal of that is 1,745,000. Now we're going down, and this water, this money is coming out of Water Development 3, Big Sandy Enlargement, Sweetwater County. That's over north of Farson. We're looking to see if we can raise that reservoir up and put the capacity back what it used to be. And then we're lining those canals over there, because the salinity in that soil over there is high, and we have to keep the salinity down to justify and take care of the lower Colorado River Compact and the Old Mexico. We can only let so much salts go through the river into Old Mexico. Clear Creek Storage, Johnson County, 250,000, and over on Frenchie Creek, you've never been over in there. I know where it's at. Maybe we can put a reservoir on there and store some more water for irrigation over on Clear Creek and goes on down till it dumps into the Powder River. Cottonwood, Grass Creek, Hot Springs County. We have Anchor Dam on the South Fork of the Owl Creek. This one we're going to take a look and see if maybe we could put a reservoir, or not a great big one, but one that could handle the North Fork of Owl Creek. That's where all the water is. It's not in the South Fork. Sublette Creek Reservoir, Lincoln County. We're trying to figure out how we can handle some of that. That's $325,000. And I think that's over there around Cokeville. There's a couple of pretty good streams come down through there, and if we could build an off, I don't know whether the Corps of Engineers will let the state put a dam on that creek or not. We'll find out. The next one is the federal government's coming in with a bunch of new guidelines on spillways, on dams and reservoirs. So we're appropriating $550,000 for new spillway designs, and we'll probably have to go in and on some of our older reservoirs, including the ones that we use to store water for Laramie and Cheyenne and all of them, and upgrade all of our spillways. And that's $1,555,000. And that's the total of this bill here. Any questions? I'll yield to Senator Hines to answer.
Any discussion on the bill? Discussion, seeing no discussion, the question being called for. The question is on Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 61 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 61 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
I almost.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 3, do pass. House Bill 15, do pass amended. House Bill 18, do pass amended. House Bill 19, do pass. House Bill 31, do pass. House Bill 57, do pass amended. House Bill 60, do pass. And House Bill 61, do pass. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott. Mr. President, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. The report has been adopted. We have some messages from the House.
February the 8th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 266, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 264, Hathaway Scholarship School Notifications. Ayes 35, noes 23, excused 2. February the 8th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 265, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 204, Patriotism in the Classroom. Ayes 52, noes 5, excused 3. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 8th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 9, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 9th.
Announcements? Senator Scott?
Mr. President, and Labor, Health, and Social Services will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the regular committee room. We're going to finish our work on House Bill 94, Primary Care Support Program, and we're going to hear House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet at 4 o'clock. We'll take up House Bill 66, Water Development Projects Funding, House Bill 6, Package Labeling and Advertising of Honey Repeal, House Bill 156, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands.
Senator Coe.
President, your committee for Education will meet tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock over here in S11 to consider House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum 2, and House Bill 72, Engrossed Teacher Merit Pay.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Vice President. The committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow on adjournment to consider the following House bills. House Bill 5, University Revenue Bonds Supplemental Coverage, House Bill 37, State Archives Storage Study, and House Bill 127, Engrossed School Finance Recalibration. And after that we consider those matters, the Appropriations Committee will talk about presenting the bill next week.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 9th, 15 minutes afternoon recess in room S18 to discuss the following bill, House Bill 217, Production States Agreement. It's engrossed.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, February the 9th at 8 a.m. in room S1 to consider the following bills. House Bill 40, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA. House Bill 95, Involuntary Commitment Examiners. House Bill 123, Circuit Court Surety Bonds, Repeal.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has carried. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 9th. A fair day's work. We are adjourned.